One of the most disturbing elements of the Prohibition War is how it's made police the enemy of otherwise law-abiding cannabis consumers. Fortunately, one group of police officers knows the futility of Prohibition and reaches out to educate the community and current law enforcement. Today, the Russ Belville Show visits with another speaker from Law Enforcement Against Prohibition with one clear message. Cops say legalize drugs.
Welcome back, everyone. Time for our Cops Say Legalize Drugs segment. And joining us today from Brockton, Massachusetts, we have Ken Williams. He's a retired detective with the Brockton, Massachusetts Police Department. Ken, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me today, Russ.
Very glad to have you here today. And as I go through your biography on leap.cc, the thing that stands out to me is your actions as a whistleblower against the city of Brockton and its police department for their failure to comply with non-discrimination. And given what we've seen in the news lately with police departments and the whole issue of black and white and everything that's happening with Ferguson and Baltimore, I thought that might be a good place for us to start. Can you give us some background on that and what you had found in your time as a police officer?
Certainly. One of the things that people need to consider is that since 1995, the federal government has expended $15 billion in the COPS program through the Department of Justice. And it created basically a jobs bill. It hired out hundreds of thousands of people to join the ranks of law enforcement. And whenever a entity, whether it's a school, whether it's a police force or a housing area that receives federal funds, once that entity receives federal funds, it has to comport with federal anti-discrimination law. So when we look at people in the streets that are protesting, they have their hands up and they're basically saying they're at a loss at how they can hold police accountable, how to reform the system, and how to have their voices heard. Title VI under the 1964 Civil Rights Act is a measure that is very capable of allowing the people to control the police force, because ultimately it's the taxpayers that fund the police. The police don't fund the taxpayers.
Absolutely. And when we look at these problems with policing and the effect that over-policing is having on African-American communities, of course, the war on drugs sits front and center as to one of the reasons behind this. Let's talk on this in two ways. Number one, how much does the war on drugs contribute and how much ending that would help? But number two, how much of this is systemic within policing and our culture in general that even changing the war on drugs won't be enough? Where do you come down in that spectrum?
The war on drugs is definitely if we can parse it out, if we think about it as an upstream problem and a downstream problem. Okay. When we look at the violence and the death downstream as a an effect of the policy, the cause is upstream from the 1970 policy. We can then look at the fact that if we eliminate the policy, we'll then control and maybe reduce a lot of that death and mayhem that we see at the bottom level downstream. So when I look at the war on drugs, I mean, I ask people all the time, did we have a gang problem before the 1970s? And a lot of folks will say, you know, maybe back in the 1920s when we had alcohol prohibition.
Yeah.
And that's a very accurate response, because ultimately that was the last time that we had any real strife, death, and violence that was attributed to a policy by the government basically trying to make the nation a dry nation. Yeah. So when we look at more than 40 years after the war on drugs was announced in the 1970s, and we're looking at the effects downstream, we created as a policy, as a nation in that policy, all of that violence. And when I say that, it's because we now have the Mexican drug cartel that's earning $65 billion annually each year smuggling drugs across the border. We've also created a corruption issue because those drugs are mostly flown in across the border. And that means that it requires Americans and folks across that border to basically work together to make that happen. The next issue is because we've spent $1.5 trillion since 1970 on this war. We have to think about what have we solved when we still have as a nation 1 to 1.5% hardcore users, and we know the numbers as far as casual users are far greater than that. So We as a nation created the violence that's downstream. Ending the war on drugs cuts back on the violence, because then a person on the street corner doesn't have to carry a firearm to go and protect a stash that they're trying to go and sell on the street corner. They're out of business the next day.
You know, and that speaks to this escalation, this kind of arms race we've seen between the criminals and the police. You know, if we think of gangs back to West Side Story, it was knives. Even the movie The Warriors from 1979, it was baseball bats and chains. And now we're looking at gangs with Uzis and Glocks and the police up armoring with, you know, military style vehicles. Can we reverse this trend? Do you think that the cops will give up and the criminals will give up these weapons even if we end the war on drugs?
Ending the war on drugs means that we have to have communication. Community policing has to be paramount in order to go and have the de-escalation of violence all the way around. At the same time, we have to be honest with ourselves and realize that in the 1970s, when this policy was created, it ultimately was just a jobs bill. It created more judges, more prosecutors, more police officers. We went shoveling brick and for unions to go and build more prison complexes. In fact, since the 1970s, when we look at the number of arrests of marijuana possession, nonviolent offense, back in 1960s, we had maybe two arrests per hour in the nation. After the announcement of the war on drugs, that ballooned all the way to more than 86 per hour. So we went from 17,000 per year mere possession marijuana arrest to more than 850,000 per year. So we can't sustain that. As a nation, we can't sustain it. But at the same time, when we think about the problem racially, we have minorities that are being targeted more than whites for mere possession. And statistically, we already know, based on data, that there are more whites that actually are, based on the percentage, that actually have used these drugs and stuff like that, but minorities are targeted. So, in fact, we're looking at 1 in 3 black men. I'm age 50, I'm an African-American male. 1 in 3 black men my age have been incarcerated.
Yeah,
that's a staggering statistic.
Yeah, completely shocking. We're speaking with Ken Williams. He's a retired detective with the Brockton Mass Police Department and a speaker with Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. You can get a great speaker like Ken in your area. They've got hundreds of them all across the United States and around the world. Check out leap.cc for more information. And, Ken, with respect to your experience working in the Brockton Mass Police Department, I'm sure you had to deal with a lot of drug offenders. Did you find it to be a revolving door? You're just dealing with the same people over and over again and nothing was changing?
Correct. I mean, as a law enforcement officer, I mean, I believe people that go into law enforcement, some folks, unfortunately, like every business out there, they go in for the wrong reasons. But a majority of people go into law enforcement, I believe, to actually help protect, serve, citizens. As a police officer, it's frustrating to go to work every day. I mean, I was a homicide detective for 13 years. To go to work every single day, and if I could paraphrase it this way, if you showed up to work every day and downstream babies were in the river and you just bailed babies out of a river every day, at some point in time you have to start thinking, why don't we go upstream and try to figure out putting these babies in the river to
yeah.
solve this problem, right?
Right.
So the war on drugs is upstream. As a policy, the policy has created the Mexican cartel. It's created the smuggling operation, the money operation that's earning the $65 billion. And downstream, when we look at the violence that's being caused by that policy, if we eliminated the upstream prohibition issue, we eliminate the downstream violence issue. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Well spoken. Now, looking at the high profile cases we've seen recently, Tamir Rice, Freddie Gray, Michael Brown, and so forth, we see this overuse of violence and this portrayal of black suspects as being hyper violent, super strong killers. You know, that this dates back to Harry J. Anslinger and the original prohibition of marijuana. And we even find it being perpetrated by black officers against black people. What are we going to have to do to change that? And how can we get the good cops to start, ratting out the bad cops?
Russ, that's an excellent question. And one of the things that I started doing was I actually testified for House Bill 1187 in Maryland back in March of this year. House Bill 1187 is a unique kind of bill. It would have afforded police officers who joined the ranks of police department in Maryland to be trained about their protections, if they start to go and speak on matters of public concern, corruption, abuse, waste, fraud, those type of measures. And it's different than the actual laws that are on the books today. It would have given not only the officers some training about their rights and their First Amendment speech, but it would have also afforded the agency notice not to go and violate those rights before there's any kind of adverse action taking place. The police unions keep on shooting down these bills. And basically, they don't want a good cop testifying against a rogue bad cop. And we need to change that. We have to have those good cops stand up, speak out on matters of public concern regarding these issues that are happening inside these police agencies, because that's what the people hired them to do. Not just arrest crimes out in the streets, but arrest racism, hatred, hate crimes, discrimination, end all that stuff, because that's an important thing that has to take place in society so we can move forward together as a society and quell some of these longstanding problems.
Would this bill protect any whistleblowers in the department from retribution? And did you face any retribution when you blew the whistle?
I most certainly did face retribution. I got thrown off the force, but that doesn't mean that I'm helpless. In fact, I filed what's called the False Claim Act case, the first in the nation, which is a novel approach using Title VI to actually force my police department, hopefully if, you know, we survive in court these different motions that the police agency and city are trying to file right at this moment to challenge it. It would force them to have to pay back triple damages to the taxpaying citizens for basically essentially committing fraud.
Wow.
They took the money. They're accountable for the money, and they're accountable to make sure that they aren't violating the anti-discrimination federal law.
Yeah, well, I wish you the best of luck on that, and as well with this this bill that's being pushed forth. If people would like to get in contact with you or to find out more about these campaigns in Massachusetts, do you have any contact info for them?
Certainly. You can reach me by cell phone, 774-451-1290, and by email. My email address is kwill46125@verizon.net. kwill46125@verizon.net.
All right. Ken Williams with Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. I want to thank you for your police service and your military service. I noticed that in your background as well. And good luck on all of these actions to try to arrest the war on drugs. We appreciate your work.
Thank you, Russ.
All right. Stay tuned, folks. We'll come back. We'll have time for a radical rant. In the age of religious cannabis use, where does that leave the non-believers? We'll talk about that when we come back from break. Stick around. You're listening to The Russ Belville Show on 420radio.org.
To the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.